In the days after the FBI identified Zahar Zanayev and his brother Tamerlan as suspects in the Boston Marathon bombings, there was near universal reaction from anyone who had known Zahar. It was shock and disbelief. It just couldn't be, they said. Today, on day 25 of the federal death penalty trial against Tsarnaev, the focus is turned back to the defendant. And we are finally hearing some of those stories as the defense begins to paint a picture of a good kid lost and under the spell of his radicalized older brother. From the Moakley Federal Courthouse in Boston, this is Finish Line inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial. For WBUR, I'm David Boeri.
And I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
We really have turned the corner today. We were all waiting and wondering if, in fact, it would happen, and it did, Kevin.
It did. What struck me today, David, is, you know, we've been hearing testimony since March 4th, and many people have sat on that witness stand and have been asked to identify the defendant. Today was the first time that anyone was asked that question and smiled.
They start with Catherine Charter Laird, a grade school teacher in Cambridge. Do you see him? Comes the question from the defense attorney. Yes, I do. She's smiling there. And you think of teachers as people who see the best in their students,
absolutely,
who remember those they've gotten the best out of. And she says he was incredibly hardworking, cared a lot about his studies, always wanted to do the right thing. What do you remember most about him? How hard he worked.
He came there in the third grade. He was about a year behind in terms of age because he was nine. And as she explained it, by the end of the year, you know, a kid that could barely speak English when he came here was very proficient. He had a lot of friends. He was very good on the soccer field, so he made friends that way. And he had fit in very quickly. It's the opposite of what we've been hearing about Tamerlan, the older manipulative brother that the defense would have you believe. If not for him, Zahar Zanayev would not be in this court. You know, Tamerlan's difference and his inability to adapt to anything made him such a corrosive figure. And as these teachers were explaining it, the difference of this kid, Zahar comes in here as an immigrant kid who can barely speak English. His difference almost became his strength. All the kids kind of liked him, and he was able to become sort of what you would call a mediator, for lack of a better term, at that age.
Tracy Gordon, the fifth and sixth grade teacher, says he was super kind, really smart, quick to learn, a very lovely person, a person you enjoyed being around. And she's followed by the seventh grade teacher, Becky Norris. She describes him as well-behaved. The teachers all loved him. He wasn't a rebel. He just always came off as quiet and friendly.
He was taking Algebra 2 in 8th grade. She said that most people that take that at that school were in 10th grade. So this is a kid that went in just a few short years to being barely able to speak English to being one of the best students in their school. They showed a report card, David, and he had all A's except in Spanish he got B one term. He was really an outstanding student.
Nobody is saying he didn't do it, and the defense has made clear that they're not seeking forgiveness. They're not trying to make excuses. They're looking for understanding.
Yes, I don't think the prosecution can go after these teachers, and they didn't, the way they went after the previous witnesses who only knew Zahar in passing or even barely knew Tamerlan in passing. These people spent hours and hours and hours over a period of years, and they are drawing a narrative that's consistent, that this kid was disciplined, he was respectful, he clearly wanted to fit in and do well, and he got along with everybody. He was not a divisive figure. He was just the opposite. And the government, I mean, the only thing the government can point out is that, you know, people change. And obviously, this is still the same person that walked down Boylston Street and put a bomb right in back of the Richard kids.
And arguing that he was somebody that was respected and loved doesn't mean he's not responsible for those murders,
exactly,
for the bombings that occurred. It means there was a fundamental change. But again, for the defense, they're trying to find something intrinsic in him that is human.
Yes, this is the essence of mitigation.
This is mitigation. You look at the brother and you struggle to find something good. But here, it's trying to establish this is somebody who had intrinsic good. He went horribly wrong, but there's some intrinsic good there.
Before the teachers got up there, David, I thought there was a fascinating, and I thought it worked well for the defense, because they got the paramedics who took the brothers on their last rides. And they have one paramedic up there, Mike Sullivan, who's talking about Tamerlan going out fighting. He'd been run over. He had been shot. He is mortally wounded. He is dying. These guys are trying to save his life. They're trying to give him treatment. And he was sitting up and screaming and growling, and he was battling with them. And at one point, Sullivan just said, we couldn't treat him. All we could do was basically restrain him.
Talk about contrasting pictures, contrasting ambulances. You have Tamerlan. He strikes you in the end as a miserable SOB that even goes to his death fighting against the world. In contrast, here comes the paramedic. Laura Lee. They treat Zahar Zanayev after he's removed from the boat in David Henneberry's backyard. He's uncuffed so he can lie on his back. They don't uncuff Tamerlan.
Oh, no.
They uncuff him so he can lie on his back so that they can get an IV going. He has a gunshot wound. His cheek is deformed. It looks like his eyes are rolling back of the head. He did get loud when they tried to put a tourniquet-like bandage on his leg, which was apparently too tight. But he is the more compliant. And there's this other part of this that just strikes me in that small detail that makes such a contrast. They ask him his medical history, and he says, oh, by the way, I'm allergic to cats.
Yes.
And then he gets there, and what does he say?
He said, where's my brother?
Concern for his brother.
You went from that very dramatic scene, and the defense starts putting up these photographs of Zahar Zanayev as a little boy. We first see him as a 9-year-old, having arrived in America, and he's posing on the bench with his older brother before the older brother became a fundamentalist wacko. But what really struck you there is the size difference and the age difference between the two, which is something the defense can't stress enough, the idea of the older brother bringing the younger brother down this forbidden road. And then we just kept seeing these photographs, just as we did of the victims, which really humanized the victims. This is having the same effect. It is an attempt to humanize Zahar Zanayev. So we see him as a little boy. We see him in his soccer uniform. We see him get a trophy after finishing second in the Charter League soccer group.
This is bright, happy, cheerful-looking kid. And again, we look at all these pictures in retrospect. And I looked over at the jurors, and I was almost chilled by what I saw, because naturally, people smile when they see baby pictures. They smile when they see pictures of children. When they see teachers gushing, they tend to make the connection. Every one of those jurors was stone-faced.
Right.
I was stunned by it. I thought it was chilling. It changed a little later when we got to the friends. We should talk about the friends, because I thought that was the most dramatic of all.
Yeah, I think the two girls that got up there, it was so obvious that they were platonic friends. They weren't girlfriends. They weren't romantic interests. They were just friends. And I thought they were very effective. Both of them broke down. And they broke down when they looked at photographs, because they were looking at the Zahar they knew before the one that, you know, committed the Boston Marathon bombing. And apparently the jurors did take note of that.
It started with Tiara Doughton, and she took the stand. It was clear she was terrified. And they asked Tiara, is he in the courtroom? He, like the jurors, has the same face. No reaction. Especially. Doesn't recognize these friends, as if they represented a past that's behind him. I'm thinking, this is a huge problem for him with the jurors. But as Tiara is testifying and struggling to testify, her voice so low, they keep on asking her to bring the microphone closer to her. She breaks up. She starts crying because she's remembering who he was. She talks about being part of Bro Night.
Yeah.
She went to UMass Dartmouth along with some others, and all the kids that had gone to Cambridge Ridge Latin hung out together there.
Yeah. They all played video games and drank beers, and the girls just like to sit there and watch the boys play the video games.
Tim Watkins, the defense attorney, is questioning Tiara Doughton, and he says to her, did you know he was a Muslim? No. Did he talk about it at all? No. What about his politics? Did he talk about politics? No. Did he ever express any anti-Americanism? No. So describe what he was like. Loyal, fun, laid back. He was friendly to everybody. Now comes the cross. And Bill Weinreb, he has been terrific at this trial. And he says, would you say he was his own person in college? She answers, yes. You said he wasn't a follower? No. He wasn't easily pushed around? Never. So that's what the prosecution wants to establish, that the argument that he is under the sway of the brother,
that he's easily manipulated. That isn't what she said.
Some points there, but not decisively for the prosecution, I thought. And then comes Alexa Guevara. As she's testifying, three of the jurors who we've seen crying before, they seem moved by what she has to say.
Yeah. We can only presume what moved them, David, but I think we both know. This girl was looking at somebody she remembered as a friend and as a decent person. And she's not sitting there making any excuses for him. She's not sitting there saying he didn't do it. She's just sitting there crying because she knows there was some good there before all this happened. And I think the jurors looking at that, this young woman who's very composed, very, you know, very articulate, you could tell that there's a little piece of this girl that was missing, that something left her after Jahar Zanayev was charged with the Boston Marathon bombing.
Very appealing young lady. She said at one point, he told me he wanted to study marine biology at UMass Amherst. And he told me, you have talent. Mm. Do not let it go to waste. Go to art school. She then said, and she's tearing up, he believed in me.
Yeah.
And then it goes on. And this is where the jurors are getting emotional. The three jurors I see. I thought Miriam Conrad asked a very effective question. She says, why are you crying? And then she gets this answer, because I really miss the person that I knew. He was a good friend and a supporter, and he was just there for me. That was a
The best moment of the defense. Throughout everything, I think it was the best moment for them.
Bill Weinreb, the prosecutor, tries to undercut some of this to gain some ground. He asks her, did you know he was watching the lecture videos of Anwar al-Awlaki? No. Did you know that he was listening to nasheeds, to jihadi songs? No, not to my knowledge. Was he a person who kept things from his friends? Yes. With that, they tried to gain some ground, but I thought this was a pretty effective day, an
clearly
emotional
the best day.
Day
for the defense, clearly.
And this brings us to the end of day 25. Join us again tomorrow as we'll hear more from a college friend, and we know we'll hear from those relatives who have flown in from Russia to testify. From the Moakley Federal Courthouse, this is Finish Line, inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial. For WBUR, I'm David Boeri.
And I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
Finish Line, inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial, is a co-production of WBUR and the Boston Globe. New episodes of the podcast will be released multiple times a week throughout the trial after court lets out for the day. You can listen at WBUR.org and at BostonGlobe.com, or you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, where new episodes will appear as soon as they're released. Go to the podcast section of iTunes and search Finish Line to subscribe. Thanks for listening.